Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. For this week's Images of the Past segment, we take a look at memories from a war that span generations. The Old Courthouse Museum in Sioux Falls hosts an exhibit from World War I. With us today, two guests whose family connection to the Great War still resonates. We welcome first Stan Christofferson from Sioux Falls. Stan, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
And also with us, we have Mary McCune. She's from Covina, California. Mary, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you.
So talking about World War I, Stan, this is a great uncle that you have. Is that correct?
Correct, yes. My great uncle, he grew up in Toronto, South Dakota.
And tell me his name and a little bit about what you know about him just from growing up and how you sort of learned his story.
Yes, name is Fred Christofferson. Later on, he went by Chris. He was editor to the Argus Leader for 30 plus years. So I knew him as a youngster and also at the end of his life, and his wife, Marie, too. I talked quite a bit about their experiences throughout their life.
Hmm. And Mary, it's your grandfather, Vincent, correct?
That's correct.
So tell me, did you hear his stories growing up, or did you hear, sort of third hand, somebody else was telling you about his experiences with the Great War?
Well, actually, in our archives of our family and doing family genealogy, we came across a letter that he had written to his brother. And in reviewing the letter, it's been very, very emphatic on his participation in the war.
Hmm. What do you mean by that? Very emphatic on his participation.
Well, he, in the letter itself, he indicated the circumstances by which the war had on him being very, very muddy. He shared how he had been scared, and then he also shared how he had empathy for those that had lost all their possessions and felt as though he was there to go on so that they would not have left their homes and everything in vain.
Hmm. Stan, did Fred tell stories to you directly? How did you sort of learn about his involvement and how he processed the war experience?
Yes, I spoke to him directly, but also after he died, I reviewed a lot of his papers that he kept in an old steamer trunk, along with his pilot's complete uniform, which we ended up donating to the Old Courthouse Museum, which they have on display now in their World War I exhibit.
How did he become a pilot?
By accident, actually. He enlisted in the United States Army Signal Corps. There wasn't an Air Force yet. He wanted to be a ground observer, but there was a shortage of pilots. And the commanding officer told him he should become a pilot. And Fred said, "Well, I know nothing about flying." And the officer said, "Well, nobody else does either." And he became a pilot. And he was ready to go over to England, or from England over to France, in a bomber airplane, but then the armistice was signed.
Mary, tell me a little bit about Vincent and where he served, and let's start talking about what his experience was like as well.
Yes, he was in France. He arrived there on October 10th of 1917, and he was from South Dakota. He lived there most of his life. The end of his life was here in California, and that's how I became very, very intimate with him. Anyway, he was in France with Battery D, the 147th Field Artillery, and of that, he spent 17 months in France, and he was in Marne, a Seine offense. He was in actually three different battles.
Okay.
The Osea and the Meuse. Hmm. And in the Meuse, when they were on the front line, that was a lot of what he had described in the letter, was actually how he had been a part of saving one of his major from being hurt. And he was in until the, well, actually, he was discharged in May 12th or 13th of 1919. But then he didn't leave France until April 4th through the 30th. He was on the battleship Kansas on his way home.
So this is a man who spends 5 months on the front line and has a pretty graphic description of what it's like to be gassed. And he passes that on in a letter. You can find that letter at sdpb.org/images of the past, where you can also see images of Fred Christofferson's uniforms and some memorabilia there, and read the letter from Vincent Newell. Mary, what is having a letter like that with the sort of details spelled out of the suffering and the fear that he experienced? What has that meant for you going forward as his relative?
Oh, well, he was my grandfather, and the letter itself, in reading and rereading it, I really became to know the empathy that he had in his heart, and how much he, you know, had to have been raised in a very clean environment, because he repeated several times, you know, that he didn't like the mud and he didn't like to be in the pig pen. And he did, you know, like you say, did talk about being gassed. And that was while he had returned from being shot, from the major that had been shot in the battalion. And in the letter, he indicated that he saw a little strip of gas, and he couldn't stop to put on his mask. And he says a little gas didn't hurt him anyway. Well, it did hurt him. It hurt him all his life, because that, as I can remember my grandfather, he did cough all the time. And
multi-layered legacy. Stan, you went on to be a counselor with the VA. Is that correct?
Yes, I did readjustment counseling with returning Vietnam veterans, as well as some other era veterans.
And tell me a little bit about you know, how you sort of have seen that evolve as wars go on and people change, and our way of viewing combat changes.
Well, what I found is that a lot of things do not change. There's different terms for them. There's shell shock, combat fatigue, PTSD, traumatic brain injuries. It all comes down to the same aspect, that when you go through combat, it changes you. It alters your thinking, both good and bad. I mean, it's not always bad, but it changes you. And the veterans talk about this experience and the loss of innocence, loss of youth at times, loss of even empathy at times, and feelings. So it really talks about their resilience and the impact of what they've gone through during combat.
Stan, we've got about a minute left, and I'm wondering if you have thoughts on how we need to look at this today as we, you know, send more of our young men and women into the military. What are some of the ways that we can support them?
Mainly it is to listen to the veterans, men and women, of course. The experience that they've gone through, give them some time, be patient with them. It's really up to the veteran when they want to talk about their experiences. It's the timing. Keep the doors open. Don't always force it with the veteran, but keep that door open and say, I'm available. Or if they don't feel comfortable with family, make them aware of other places where they can go to talk to other veterans, such as the VA hospital. There's the VAE, a lot of other veterans organizations too. where that may be a little safer environment for the veterans to talk to somebody who maybe has a little bit more of an understanding.
Stan Christofferson, Mary McEwen, I want to say thank you to both of you for joining us today. We appreciate your time and insight.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks for the invitation.